Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call this meeting to order, second Wednesday, July 27th, at 5:30. Please stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, and do we have approval of the agenda?
Actually, I wanted to make a change.
Any changes to the agenda?
Yeah.
Okay.
I left my iPad home. I used my iPad for the first time in a long time and on the thing about the signs, it indicated in the minutes that it was an Eelgrass sign that was incorrect.
This is the end of consent agenda.
We were doing the minutes, right?
We're doing the agenda, approval of the agenda.
Oh, agenda? Oh, I'm sorry.
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
Is there an exec session? No exec session? Okay, I second it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Consent agenda. Are there any changes to the consent agenda?
Yes, I have one.
Okay.
Small change.
And where is that?
It was talking about, it was an Eelgrass sign that was incorrect, but actually I was just putting up Eelgrass signs. What was actually incorrect was that there was an existing city sign that had nothing to do with Eelgrass. It was just left there for however many years it's been since we sold the Gaitai Lagoon. And it directed the people to call the city, but it wasn't an Eelgrass sign. The Eelgrass signs are correct.
I make a motion to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Public comments not related to the agenda. Melinda.
I briefly reviewed the draft capital improvements budget and the financial statements through the first quarter of this year, which I was able to get to have again.
Can you speak up a little bit more?
Yes.
That fan's kind of loud.
A few comments. The lack of understanding regarding the sustainability of the port continues unabated. I was also given an update of this afternoon's workshop. Therefore, maxing out the port's debt ability quite frankly results in financial collapse if any unanticipated issues arise. And considering how many there have been over the last few years, that would be very ill-conceived. I have been under the understanding that the industrial development district taxing ability can only be used for new economic development, not maintenance.
Be used for capital improvement.
Capital improvements and maintenance are two different things. Assuming you can use it, I understand that you want to force it on folks in districts 2 and 3 without a vote. Note that there's nothing on your list that gives benefit to districts 2 and 3. It would be very underhanded to attempt to stick it to 2 and 3 without a vote. I can pretty much guarantee that a lawsuit would ensue. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Berger?
Folks on DDoC are having a real problem with that radio out of the ICA. And we've made multiple calls. It's huge. They turned the radio up so loud you could hear it on the third finger. We've all called over the port office and they immediately shut it down. Sometimes on the week they go late, the port office is closed. I know Eric has talked to Corey and he's very willing, but somehow it needs to be a more forceful message. I mean, it's huge. You can't believe how loud. We don't mind the industrial noise, banging and stuff like that. We accept that. So if there's anything can be done to make a more forceful thing about that radio, it's like...
Now, which radio is that?
They turned the radio up max volume inside the aluminum fabrication.
I've heard it at times where it's like, it's really good stereo and then it
to like blast out right towards like, the marina. And
like, it's so not just even nice music, it's like just...
Well, there's a clause in the lease agreement that we'll address on that.
I hope so, because I'm just speaking for a number of people, not just myself. We've all called over the office and called Eric, and he has taken care of it. Corey is, I understand, is very amenable, but he needs to get the message down to these folks. Thank you so much.
Yep. Growing pains with the new tenant.
Yeah.
Any other public comments not related to the agenda? All right, moving along to point number 5, second reading, 2017 operating and capital budget development schedule.
Sure. So this is the schedule that we reviewed last time. We added to August 10th, we confirmed that Cynthia Weed will be coming to, she's bond counsel, and she'll be attending that workshop along with the county assessor and the county treasurer. And then we added in the public tour of tier one projects. Initially we were thinking it was open to the public, so it wouldn't be an open public meeting, it would be no commissioners. That's, if you want to change that, it's up to you, but we planned that for August 17th, starting at around 8 o'clock. And then September 14th, we made an adjustment there because we had confirmed that the county assessor will be in attendance to go to the property tax levy for 2017. Otherwise, everything else is the same as the last meeting.
I would also emphasize that given the discussion that at last meeting, we seen that there was interest on the part of the commission to hold such a tour, but really that its educational purposes would be more for stakeholders and the public, and that so made the decision to schedule it at a time that was convenient with the low tide, so we can see the lower extremities of the jetty, as well as then not advertising it as such a meeting. So if you would like something different than that, by all means, we can change things. But I kind of went with my read of your comments from the last time that you knew some of these projects and that it was probably more important to focus on how our audience be the people who are interested. That being said, Commissioner Tucker, you know we can make arrangements for you to get on out on the Boat Haven jetty. And we decided that it was too risky to try to take people out there anyhow. It's just it's really cumbersome to get up there. Though I did it with my tennis shoes and a spur once.
Yeah, I can just take a look at that myself. It's not a commission meeting, it's the public. I guess that would be driven by staff, so I would need to be there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
One other thing I should mention on September the 28th, I just realized I went and looked on my calendar. That's a day that the people that are going to the environmental conference are going to be gone.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So with that, we're probably going to move the whole meeting.
We did, and I thought we did. Yeah, and I think perhaps we just didn't catch that in here.
I think we moved it to Monday, 26th.
Yeah.
So, well, 26th.
We'll make that correction.
Did we move it to 26th?
I think so, and I...
Yeah,
I was having a meeting ago that we did that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Go back and look.
Yep.
Okay. Any other thoughts on this?
Oh, it looks good to me.
Are we adopting this formally?
It's just like an approval. Resolution? Yeah, no. We don't need a resolution. But we have to change the date. So, I guess I'll come back next meeting.
You could prove it with the correction.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you'd like to approve it with a noted correction, we can do that.
Okay. So I make a motion, we approve it with the correction.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Let's see. B, Johnson Fabrications, the second reading on the lease. Eric?
So this lease comes before you again, the second reading, with no substantive changes whatsoever from the lease that you saw previously. We did do a little bit of follow-up investigation based on the questions and concerns that were raised at the meeting on the 13th. In particular, I think the concern that that I understood from the discussion was, number one, was there a way that we might achieve a market rate rent sooner rather than later? And was there a lower cost option for the roof repair? After again discussing the matter with both Harold Anderson and Larry Ozzie, and taking another look at the very specific kind of line item recommendations that were within the December draft of the CRRP, I think our conclusion is that the minimum amount to fix the roof alone, separate from the other repairs that were outlined in the draft repair replacement plan, is just over $100,000. It's a really kind of structurally very kind of screwy roof and an outlier. The geometry of it, basically, it's the water goes onto the roof. It's not gabled in a way. It's an inverse gable, effectively, so that it's cooling on the roof. Maintenance staff has already, I think, undertaken substantial efforts to try to fix the leaks as best they can. Because of the cost, again, and the kind of the capital priorities that we discussed earlier this afternoon, the feeling is that we're on solid ground with the draft lease language as recommended, which is to say a below market rate rental at 41 cents a square foot until and unless the port undertakes the roof repairs, at which point it would go up to 67 cents a square foot. It's a five-year lease term with no renewal recommended, and it's because of the fact that we're not sure that we can undertake these improvements within the next 5 years, given the other capital requirements that we have. And we're frankly happy to have a tenant willing to occupy the space.
It's amazing how much money for the cost to fix a 750 square foot roof, or I mean for a footprint.
A pole building,
I mean, I just priced out a pole building way bigger than that.
I know.
For less than half that amount of money.
The entire building. I know. I mean, I'm almost of the impression we should abandon the structure, knock it down, and put something else up. We need money ahead.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Well, I mean, and honestly, that's a discussion that we've had at the staff level. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily within the next 5 years, while we seek to find another home for Johnson Fabrication, but certainly long term, it may absolutely be in the financial interest of the port simply to demolish this portion of the building rather than focusing this much capital on a roof repair on such a small space. I mean, I think you would take the better part of 8 decades to get to a break even, even at the market rate.
Well, we certainly don't want to put them out of doors.
No.
So I guess more, my opinion is it's a safety issue at some point, so we don't want to allow it to get to a point where it's condemnable.
Right, and again, to restate, I think the point that I tried to make at the meeting on the 13th, we did review that specific issue with Harold Anderson before bringing the lease to you, and we're assured that given the duration of the lease and also provisions within the lease that allowed us to revisit the safety issue. In other words, if we conduct a subsequent building inspection and Harold or a subsequent engineer were to identify an issue with those roof trusses that was perceived to be a real threat to life and limb, we have the authority under the terms of the lease as crafted to terminate the lease on, I think it's 90 days. I think it's 90 days notice.
I think we should just renew the lease and under the terms that you just described and just not repair it.
Yeah, I agree.
So is that a motion?
Yeah, I make a motion that we approve the lease and under the terms of continuing operations without, you know, a huge capital investment.
All in favor?
Aye.
It would be good, just as a caveat to that, it would be good. I did talk to a contractor friend of mine, and he doesn't believe this.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you can build a new structure for what you're talking about.
That's the first thing that came to, you know, like, why wouldn't we tear it down and build another structure for the rec center?
So, first reading, Port Townsend Boat Haven Reserve.
Well, I'll introduce this topic, and then Abigail will take it up. And as you see from the materials, but just to clarify, what we are recommending is that that there has been a Boat Haven Reserve that had been created and accruing over the years, and we would like to, in essence, kind of cap that off and keep the funds that were in there reserved for the stated intended purposes, but then to create an organization-wide capital reserve fund. And so basically switch that earmarking of those dollars into that fund. So we're not talking about expending this fund at this point. We're just talking about let's cap this off and then let's create an organization-wide. I'll turn it over to Abigail. She can. What?
That's pretty much it. I mean, we just.
There's some details in there.
Changing the transfer of funds from that reserve into a different reserve that's port-wide for capital.
Yeah.
So the amount of fund transfer going to remain the same at $10,000 a month?
At this point, that's what we budgeted for. So I would imagine we would keep it that way. And I had mentioned in this write-up, too, that I would produce a revised budget, but that's not really necessary either, because we're not required to amend our budget. So I think it's just a motion that you guys would make, whether you approve that change.
Well, it's been an interesting subject. I mean, there's been some disagreement over the past years. it's my understanding that the Boyne Hudson, Boat Haven Reserve Fund was for the Boat Haven Marina. And then I've heard other interpretations that it was includes the boat yard or includes, you know, monies were spent on the washdown pad and some other things associated with the new admin building, which in my opinion is not part of the Boat Haven Reserve Fund for the spirit of what she was created for, which was specifically for the marina itself.
I've heard that too, as far as the yard goes, is an inclusion of Boat Haven in this whole area. I didn't go back and, you know, document all of the...
But it's not accounted for as the Boat Haven, you know, I mean,
right.
Our budget and all our other documents, you know, documentation specifically says Boat Haven is a site, it's a separate entity itself.
Well, I think it's pretty clear in the first resolution in 2004 that they said that this was a progressive mortgage. It was related to the progressive mortgage rate plan. So to me, that means the PT Boat Haven mortgage.
I agree.
So I don't think there's any, you know, discussion about that really, because that seems pretty plain. I don't know about the prior usage. I didn't go back and do research. I don't know what.
But the language and the spirit of what that was created for. So I guess what I'm getting at is I have heartburn what monies have been taken out of that fund and been utilized for other for investments aside from the repair and replacement of portions of the Boat Haven itself.
The other piece to that is, though, that this original resolution was only for 3 years. But then it was continued just through the budget process. So they put it into the budget to continue it, but there was no additional resolution, except in 2008 they increased it, and I'm assuming it was for a project that they thought was coming up, because they had budgeted it for $80,000 and they changed it to $200,000. So, but otherwise, as far as a resolution goes, it was only supposed to last for a certain amount of time, but we've continued to do it up until March of this year. So, kind of messy.
Yeah.
Did you have a comment?
Yes. That reserve should have been applied to the renovation of the docks, and that accounting was not done. So that reserve really shouldn't exist at all. And it's not a segregated fund, so it doesn't really have any particular meaning.
What do you mean when you say renovation of the docks? You're talking about AV docks?
Yeah.
I should have sucked it all up, but I think that's what you're saying. Berger?
I'm probably the only surviving member of that episode of Port history, because I was there for that, participating in that. And it was really, we discussed laying out money to, because we knew that the docks were in bad condition. I was couldn't believe when Herb Beck said $250,000. That was beyond my wildest imagination, but it was all to fix the docks. Originally, it was because we were facing the AV docks, and at that time we thought we had up about $700,000, I think, or maybe even a little more. And I suggested that just use that for the engineering for the AV docks and don't borrow as much money. But Larry had felt, no, let's keep that since money was so cheap, and we'll just go ahead and borrow for the AV docks. And so the understanding was to continue to renovate the docks. And it was taken to our revenue. So.
So I could go back and do an accounting of the use of funds, the contribution to the reserve, if you'd like. That's not what I was proposing here.
Yeah.
And that to me would be additional, you know, project I could do, no problem. But at this point, I'm more feeling the urgency of the capital needs we have now that are port wide, and that we really should be funding reserve if we can. And so that's where.
Yeah, and I think that's the recommendation is forward looking, so that we can have a fund that is specifically for capital improvements, probably just as importantly for match dollars, so that we can. In our applications, we can point to and say, okay, you know, we have this money set aside for specifically for projects of this nature. So we could, if the commission so desires, go back and try to do an accounting of past transactions and what the current balance may or may not be. But this one really is forward looking.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. I think that, you know, this history is interesting, but what we really need to do is, as we talked about in our workshop this morning, is go forward. And so what we need to do is do this. And, I mean, we've talked about this in other court commission meetings, and I think that Larry and Jim brought down the resolutions, and we read them verbatim, and there was nothing that said, I mean, you know, it didn't come to a clear conclusion, and you can argue that the boat ramp is in the boat haven or not. It's not going to make any difference. It's already spent. It's done. What we need to do is go forward and say, why don't we have this much matching funds in a reserve fund? It's a reserve fund. And go forward.
Well, the main thing is that we're able to make the necessary repairs to keep the marina viable. And that's our one asset that's guaranteed an income. The income that you count on, which the boatyard doesn't fall into that category, not necessarily. Not as steady in the growth and increase that you can on every year. And I think that we'd be remiss of our responsibilities if we didn't make sure that the necessary repairs, you know, are funded, and that we fulfill that task.
Right, that's why we're creating a Port Wide Reserve Fund. Mm-hmm. It's our job to say, fix it.
Well, one comment, and then Bertram, you can make a comment, but it is a first reading, and it's a great example of why we have a first and second reading. So you, the audience, certainly have time between now and the next commission meeting to weigh in with each of us. We've got our numbers and our contact, and let us know what you think.
I'm going out of town for 2 weeks, so I won't be here, but yesterday we had a really substantive conversation, at least an hour or something, Sam and Abigail, Ed was there, discussed this whole concept of reserve fund. I think we do need to set money aside, there's no question, but It's in reference to capital improvements, replacement and preserving, building a rate structure. And it's the whole shoebox concept. And I know that in a port, it's hard to do that, but we do that in our homes where we say, well, we got to fix this. We're going to start putting away each month for this. So I agree we should set money aside. But my fear is that if we throw it into a general fund, we won't have as clear a vision of where that money is going. When we know, for example, that we need $1.4 million to do the Boat Haven, AB Docks, and Harold Anderson said 1.6 or 1.4. He says that you should do it in 11 by 2011. You can create a rate structure that makes up the difference between what the reserve you already have and what you need, and that's the basis of your rate structure. Now, there are certain facilities like Point Hudson that are never going to make it, but at least you can say, this is what we need, this is where our rates are, and how can we build a rate structure that's going to approach that? So if you have reserve funds for each of those based on Harold Anderson's estimates, at least, even though it's going into general fund, you'll have your eye on the ball for each facility and are your rates compatible with that. You probably can elaborate on that because you spent a lot of time.
Yeah, and I think that we did have a discussion yesterday about different ways that you can analyze the financial performance of the port, and that it is you can look at net operating income from assets or a class of assets. You can then look at the return on equity of those. You can certainly do some rate structuring based upon future anticipated repairs, et cetera. So there's different ways that we can build this kind of connection within our budget or within our budget analysis. I think at some point you do get a perhaps a diminishing return of like how find a resolution you want to get to on that. You know, you probably don't want to know what the towel dispenser is making, but we can work towards that. It's going to take a bit of time to set up our systems to be able to do this kind of analysis. That being said, I think that is a good value to try to bring to both the commission and our public. I think it is not in opposition to the idea of having an overall reserve fund. I think that you can account for the expenditures out of that fund and be able to trace those and make those transparent. So I very much hear Bertram's concern and looking for ways of how do we really see this, where revenues are coming in, where they're going out, what our current needs are, future needs are. And I think that we can do that with this tool of having a generalized capital reserve fund. I think that we can still account for where those expenditures are being made.
The one thing that's totally wrong about that is that this is the port overall. It's not separate entities that make up the port.
I absolutely understand that.
And so it's a... When you talk about rate structures, the one that you missed is fair market value. And that has nothing to do with determining a rate based on depreciation of an asset or replacement of an asset. You can't do that because we already realized that there are assets at this port that are never going to produce income or always going to be a drag on the port. And so then the question becomes not how do you try to deal with the rate structure, but how do you try to cut the losses of the port by getting rid of those assets or leasing those assets such that somebody else has the liability for that. It's becoming very frustrating to hear really silly things brought up like, we should increase the ramp fees for the boaters, that pull their boats in and out. You could double it. you know, it's $35 in Port Angeles, but if that's a fair market rate that you can get, great, double it. But how much money is that going to bring in? What, $3,000 additional a year? That's not the monetization of assets that needs to be focused on.
We got it. We got it, Melinda.
Okay.
I would, you know, you ought to come to the workshops. I would encourage you to come to the workshops.
I listen to them.
Yes. But I mean, it's much more free willing, so
yeah.
We can let the public go longer. So we're not doing anything on this tonight, but we'll be back. So again, I would encourage you to give us opinions on that. We'll be looking at this in 2 weeks.
So.
Okay, the SEPA. See y'all.
This is absolutely fascinating.
Yes.
Topic, so
get out the two pigs and hold the eyelids on your mouth. Yeah. I was really.
So you actually reviewed this one time previously, but it was so long ago that we're putting this back on the agenda as a first reading. As you may recall, the impetus for this actually was the draft capital repair and replacement plan, which under the State Environmental Policy Act is a non-project action, a programmatic action, which requires review under SEPA and issuance of a threshold determination. The court has, on very rare occasions in the past, exercised what is known as SEPA lead agency status, where it has conducted its own review for environmental issues in-house, typically either on non-project actions or alternatively on very small project actions. But the court did so without having really clearly articulated kind of the rules of the road and what might happen in the event of, for instance, an appeal to a threshold determination. We had no process established. So I think the view of staff is that going forward, we would continue to rely in almost all cases, particularly on project-related actions, the jetty being an example, or the improvements that will be undertaken in the shipyard and boatyard on the city, or in the instance of activities out in the unincorporated area on Jefferson County, DCD, to serve as the lead agency in those instances. But there are a kind of a narrow class of instances where it's probably more efficient and effective for us to handle it in-house on very small SEPA exempt projects where we could be the lead agency and provide a letter in the file saying we've reviewed this and determined that it's SEPA exempt. Or alternatively, on kind of the routine and ordinary kind of program level stuff that we have to do, like the initial adoption of our capital repair and replacement plan, and then subsequent updates to that document. So what the resolution and the attachment A before you would do is in large part kind of adopt and incorporate by reference the rules of the road that are established within what is known as the SEPA Green Book, Chapter 197, 11 of the Washington Administrative Code. But in a, as it relates in particular to our internal process, in the unlikely event that a threshold determination were to be appealed, we've kind of specified how we would handle that internally. So that's what this is intended to address. We don't intend to, I don't think, employ our SEPA authority very frequently, but it's kind of a housekeeping measure in many respects to make sure that we've clearly outlined the provisions of the administrative code that we're going to rely upon, and then those, what our specific internal process would be in the event. And that's what this would do.
How much does this add to your workload?
Which... Well, SEPA lead agency status actually for instance, if we were to exercise it on the adoption of the repair and replacement plan, pretty straightforward. We would complete an environmental checklist, we would publish a notice of pending threshold determination, receive comments from the public, and then issue a threshold determination, and then provide it to both to all the kind of a standard list of people, agencies that would be on our comment list, as well as any citizens who had offered comment during that pending threshold period. So it's really pretty minimal. I think most of the work is actually before you, up front.
Any public comment on this? Okay. I think we've beaten that one a little bit.
So I guess I'm really not clear on why we need this SEPA checklist for our programmatic, which is the comprehensive or capital improvement scheme. I mean, how can you do a SEPA checklist on all the work we're going to do on all the stuff we got that's broke?
The programmatic SEPA checklist. So SEPA review is done at two different levels, project level and programmatic. And that is standard throughout the state agencies do that. So when you have, the city adopts a comprehensive plan, for example, you know, far-reaching document, there is analysis done at that. So you don't get really granular in that. You look at the potential impacts for, in the case of the city's comprehensive plan, the densities that they're doing, et cetera. So it's a higher level, higher elevation evaluation of it. And why it might be beneficial, and I dare say that I asked Eric this question, why would we want SEPA lead agency status? And you know, I've been what do we call the
responsible
official and for SEPA review, and he's convinced me that in the case of programmatic review, you would then be able to, rather than going to the city for being and getting basically in their queue for their workload review, we would be able to do it rather expeditiously ourselves. It's the same timelines of going out for public review. People get to, you know, you have to advertise it, you have to post it, you send it out to a list of commenters, so it gets the same type of scrutiny that any type of SEPA review does. But basically, we do it rather than tasking the city to do it, and we can just stick with our schedule. So that's the biggest advantage, particularly because we're not looking for project level other than the small exemptions. You know, big projects like the jetty replacement, we go to the city and they take the agency status.
You know how to do all this. You might have to send to school.
I do. I do it in the verbal impact statement. So yes.
Great. Good.
Yep.
Good. Brad. Good.
Good. Good. Okay.
Potential immediate action items. Nothing. Wrong to go there. Yep. So other business is our workshop on the 24th.
Timber House closing.
Do you have a time?
3 o'clock for the workshop.
5:30 for
the until approximately 4:45, where we have a quick break, something to eat. Come back at 5:30 for the general meeting, the regular meeting.
All right. Any other comments on that?
Sounds good.
Staff comments?
Do we need?
We need
approval.
Move it.
Do we? I think we approved it before, didn't we? It was requested. Okay. Yeah. I think with proper notification. Okay. Staff comments. So, we have advertised for a temporary part-time position at the Cool City Marina. Somebody to help us with the regular maintenance, keep up the bathrooms and lawn mowing and other things. We've had a caretaker down there, so he has come off medical leave, but we're just looking to add some assistance. So that is out for ad, and I think we have two applicants in at this point, so hoping to make a hire on that soon. We are working on bringing the boat ramp closeout, requesting your acceptance of the project. We're shooting for the August 10th meeting, and we hope to make that. If not, it will be the meeting after that. For completing compiling our documentation and developing a schedule for some of the additional items that remain to be done. So we'll be coming back in front of you with that. The project tour, again, scheduling that for August 17th, and we're going to we're taking our boat down to the Port Hudson Marina, take people out to see the jetty from the water. I think it really gives you a very different perspective on it, and then we'll be looking, touring one or two buildings at Port Hudson, and then coming back if people wish to, and they will travel on their own. We'll meet up again at our facilities down here, and we'll show one or two. We've decided not to take people out on the jetty at the boat haven. It's just too cumbersome. So we will be advertising for that. We will be limiting that to certain number of people. We don't quite have that number. I don't imagine there's going to be a standing room only crowd, but you never know. We have increased our hours at Port Hudson on the weekends. They are now open till 6 p.m.
And Bohaven.
Oh, Bohaven too. Correct. Thank you. I knew Port Hudson, so Bohaven, particularly on the weekends, we oftentimes have arrivals that come in, and then they kind of wander around, not clear what to do. So increased our hours there, and that will continue throughout the summer. I've scheduled a call with the Portland Loco and Department of Ecology, as well as
Port of the Waco and Jerry O'Keefe.
Jerry O'Keefe, excuse me, yes, WPPA used to be with Ecology. That's right. Discuss a potential derelict vessel demolition area. I think you're aware of that proposal, so following up on that, and then we'll go on to talk with DNR about that. So I will keep you posted as to that. We had a meeting with Northwest Municipal Advisors, as I mentioned earlier, and got an update on our bonding capacity, and they are continuing to give us some information about what the bond markets are doing right now, as well as how this might relate to industrial development district and our ability to bond off of that. So we've been on that conversation and are in regular communication with them. Some repair and maintenance things, just to keep you apprised on things. The airport master light has been replaced, and so that's now up and running. We are looking at the breakwater for Bohaven, as we mentioned. Also looking at doing some clean out of the airport ditch that's become quite overgrown, and so we're looking into both jurisdictional issues on that, as well as just getting scheduled to do. I'll keep you posted. The Armory Building fire escape is not quite in place. There's been a couple issues. It's getting close, so keep you posted on that. I do have one final thing. I'd like some feedback from you. I have a meeting scheduled with Representative Derek Kilmer on August 12th. It's the introductory meeting in my new role here. I certainly plan on talking with him about some of our capital needs and potentially looking with his staff to identify other federal fundings. But wanted to know if there's any other specific issues that you would like for me to bring up with the representative.
The meeting's on the what? 12th?
August 12th.
Do we meet before you meet?
August 10th.
Yeah, we have a 10th.
Yep. Yes, yeah, so if you want to think about it and let me know on the 10th, we can. And I'll be meeting with staff.
We can meet before the 10th. We can meet with you before the 12th individually,
yep.
Too, right?
Yes, so. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's it for me.
Just very briefly, an update on the stormwater feasibility study at Mode Haven. Had a report from Brandon Ball last week on kind of progress being made on the hydrologic modeling. You may recall that they had three test pits essentially along the north boundary of the yard. One being kind of adjacent to the northeasternmost sand filter against Sims Way, and then two others that were in the long-term yard. One kind of on the far western limit of the long-term yard, and then another one that was kind of midpoint along the boundary of the old lumber yard. Both of those sites to the west showed very poor infiltration results and are probably not suitable for bioinfiltration. The site to the northeast performed far and away the best.
Is that right here?
Right over here. It's kind of west of Anderson Machine Shop and Clint Thompson's space in the yard. And depth to water there was, I think, 4 to 5 feet with no tidal influence detected, and the infiltration rate was good. So that a linear feature along the north fence line right now seems to be very much in play. They've not yet completed all of their hydrologic modeling, so they don't have, at this point, a clear read on the size requirements. So at least for the time being, certainly as we have tenants coming to us looking for new long-term leases, et cetera, we're kind of trying to hold folks off as long as we can until we really understand kind of what the space requirements would be for infiltration sites. I think we're expecting the hydrologic modeling to be completed to have a definitive read on that probably within the next week or two, very soon.
So this hydrologic modeling, is this designed to determine how much capacity we need to build for, or is this for use for siting the actual thing?
It's both, and I think the area it's pretty much as you go east along the north line of our property, the conditions progressively improve, and it makes sense because I think it's the high point of the port's property at Mode Haven. The areas to the west really do seem to, even the one that was in the middle, but still in the lumber yard, it was marginal at best, and not recommended. The one far to the west is definitely out of bounds, not workable. I think they put the backhoe took a scoop and it immediately filled with water. And there's clearly some hydrologic connectivity between the wetland area to the west and the subsurface conditions right underneath the lumber yard. And let's see, the second point was going to be on, had another, thank you, it's a good prompt. If we could probably talk for quite some time on this, and it will scare you. Jetty, where we finally have revised permit drawings back from the Coastal Harbor. You may recall at your last meeting we had a discussion about the city and ecology kind of standing fast on requiring the maintenance of public access on that South Jetty arm. So we have the revised permit drawings, I think, as of yesterday, and so we'll be going into SEPA and shoreline review at the city within the next week or so.
How are you feeling about the stormwater, this whole plan with our timeline?
We're tracking. I mean, their parametrics is on task and on schedule, and so we're tracking that, the development of alternatives, and then what we can accomplish within the time frame remains to be seen, what they're going to recommend. It is a very aggressive schedule for us. I think that
as we continue to show good faith efforts and we get the report, we follow up, we go to implement it, and if for some reason we get hung up in permitting or other actions, I think we can make a case for not being penalized for not making that September 30th. But we absolutely can't stall. So we'll see what the recommendations are, but I have some regular contact with them, and they're moving along. They're not stalling at all.
And I should also point out that they probably will be recommending early action items pretty soon as well, at least provisionally. That will be part of the Level 3 engineering report. There'll be both kind of early action items, operational and management changes that we might undertake in concert with the capital improvements that are going to be required as well. And the types of changes that have been at least discussed so far are potentially, at least for, it's still under discussion apparently internally with them, is vessel encapsulation. A recommendation for a screening basically at the 300 ton washdown pad to try to prevent overspray of kind of oxidized, you know, paint off the hulls. And then finally, probably removal of some of the hot spots in the yard, removal of the material and replacement with clean gravel.
Any
working on the renewal of our insurance property policies, our general liability property and vehicle, also our airport insurance, our storage tank pollution liability insurance, and the airport insurance. Nothing very significant. I haven't gotten the general liability property and vehicle back yet, nor have we gotten the ocean marine, Gulf Marinas back yet, but the others we have. And the airport was a slight increase of about 2%, which is very small. No increase in the pollution, the storage tank pollution liability insurance, although they did raise the life of the deductible from $5,000 to $15,000. It's kind of significant because of the age of the tank. It looks like the other ones that have come in have been about 2%, which is about what it was last year, 2% increase. So we should know in the next week or so the other two. Also met with the safety committee. I don't know if you're aware, there's a recommendation that we add in water ladders at Oath Haven, more strategically placed, and those have been added. Also staff brought forth some really good recommendations, safety recommendations that we need to be looking at regarding parking in the travel lift area and the signage, which you talked about before.
How many, you did ladders at Boat Haven? How many?
Five out of five.
Like and along the long dock or on the fuel dock, or how did you determine where to put ladders?
Where there weren't ones. within a certain space of other ladders. I could have brought the diagram with me to show you, but they did compare it to other similar sized marinas, and we are really well stocked with our safety workers, so I think they've done as well. Let's see. Also, staff pointed out some safety issues with the walkway, the slideway, the sidewalk, very long road even. There's some holes there from underneath where the water comes up. They pulled out the underneath part and took a hole.
This is what again?
Holes in the sidewalk, along Boat Haven.
It's kind of where the cars park.
Yeah, right by there.
Between that log and where the cars park.
Yeah, so the underneath part. Yeah. And it's a very narrow strip anyway for walking. So that was another thing. They end up walking out into the road, and then that's not very safe for staff either. So we're looking at all these issues. making progress on the annual report and to the financial statements, which is good. I should be able to get a draft statement of activity to the Northwest Municipal Advisor, which will help them to come back to us with information on the bond. That's about it.
What passed? Didn't say anything all day.
I'm practicing silence, so no, there's nothing else, nothing to add. Just
Abby, do you not add the where we're at more in the storage?
Yeah,
we're at third.
The operation reports.
Operation.
Okay. Public comments? Any more public comments?
I don't have any comments except that I did meet my former commissioner, Dave Thompson, who's in our audience this morning, and he caught me on the way out and said that he had asked a person who lives on A dock or AB dock, what was the effect of the boat ramp expansion? And the guy said, oh, it's obvious. There's about double the amount of boats going in there. So in other words, it's not just more convenient. There's more people actually utilizing the facility by not any, you know, real means of counting, but just the guy's gut condition is about double. That's a true bad thing.
But I got my every other meeting question to ask you again. What's the latest with the ghost ship down there on the heavy haul?
I'm glad I don't have to ask that question. Brad all covers
it. It's driving me crazy.
Anybody want a boat? We're offering a boat for free.
And actually, I thank you for reminding me of that because you had asked specifically if we had met with the organization formerly known as Vessel Assist, now known as
Towboat
US. Thank you. And went over his recollection of events, how we ended up with Mr. Cobb tied on our dock. And so we were working with both moorage and yard staff to see if there are any changes to our procedures that we need to do. It is, it's not a super common event that we have this, but it is a great consequence. So we're still noodling our way through there. What kind of procedural changes that we're going to make, and probably at the operational level, and everything from making sure that we actually have copies of insurance and everything before we need schedule things to be lifted. So we're working our way through that. And then as far as the actual final disposition of the
boat. So the appeal period to the Pollution Control Bureau's board lapses on August 4th. We have an individual with some interest in the vessel coming to look at it next week. This individual is kind of tied in with some larger historic vessel nonprofit organizations. He's coming to take a look at it and see whether they might have some interest. We're also exploring every avenue from a legal standpoint to make the taxpayers of the county whole. And there are multiple lines of potential liability, and that's probably all that should be said.
But did you ever get a hold of the military?
Did
you want to blow it up?
I spoke with Captain Indian Island. I just not followed up with him yet. I did speak with him briefly. I did offer it to NOAA for Angela's office and for Dollar, and they declined. I said, it's a NOAA vote. You can have it back.
You're sworn.
I'm going to put a workshop to just a public gathering in Quilcene, I believe, actually, is it the 12th? It's the second Tuesday of August. What is that?
I thought we had a meeting on the 10th.
Yeah, but that's not Quilson.
Yeah.
That was only Quilson?
24th.
Yeah, so on the... The 9th. Yeah, so we're going to have a meeting on the 9th. Probably at the Gearhead.
You.
Just me, personally.
Oh, okay. It was interesting.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm just going to be down there. So, anybody wants to come down, feel free to come down.
So this is working. Like Quilson community meeting?
Yeah. And I'm working with Linda and, just kind of bring up any issues you want to bring up and we can kick around a little bit. So,
Gearhead Deli?
Yeah.
At what time?
Lunch. 12 o'clock.
I might go and sit just in the background.
Oh, great.
Oh, you don't want to go? Sit in the background?
Sure.
I'll be quiet. Come on. Yeah.
Have to be in the public meeting that act then.
He's quiet, it is.
I don't say anything.
So, and the only other thing is, I think this is probably a good time to bring it up. I've been approached by a shipyard about the heavy haul-out caps that they pay. By the shipyards for the use of that, and the belief that there is an inequity in how that applies. And I think we really owe it to all of them to take a look at this and see if we can.
Are you talking about the 3%?
Yeah. We really need to take a look at that and take some. You can say it now because we're in a public meeting.
Yeah.
This is a good spot to bring it up.
Well, I mean, there was some individuals popped in here last spring making issue of that. Wanted to see the accounting under that.
Right.
There was some discussion about, well, what was the original spirit of that particular fee, the original, investments that had been made. But on the other side of the coin, the machine's aging, and we got to maintain it too.
Yeah.
And just to paint the thing, we're looking at over $75,000 just to paint it.
Yeah.
And it needs paint.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole bunch of other things to consider.
That salt water.
Well, that's just it, because it's the salt water bath out there,
I think the decision to be made is, the silver lining is, I think we should be more careful how we collect that, so that everyone's paying their fair share.
And maybe that fee needs to, the name of the fee maybe needs to change.
Yeah. And maybe it needs to be more institutionalized so that we can collect
it. Sure.
That's it. So our next meeting will be on the 10th at 9:30 will be our public workshop, and at 1 p.m. will be our board commission meeting. Is there another business? We're adjourned.